Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, June 9, 2016. The U.S. government expresses disappointment over President Kiir's and First Vice President Riek Machar's New York Times article.
We expect the parties to fulfill their responsibilities. You know, reconciliation and justice are not mutually exclusive, which is why the peace agreement includes both elements and why the United States will make every effort to support the formation of both as critical steps.
And South Sudan officials burned tons of ivory in a show of commitment to stop illegal poaching.
The source of this ivory is either confiscated through the court or convicted from violators of law. And most of them are from Juba International Airport. The decision is always either Cairo or Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. State Department expressed its disappointment over President Salva Kiir's and First Vice President Riek Machar's New York Times opinion piece, which argued against establishing a hybrid court. The two leaders instead suggested a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to be formed to grant amnesty to all those who participated with their testimony. State Department spokesperson Mark Turner says there needs to be accountability for the crimes committed during South Sudan's 2.5-year conflict. He says the hybrid court will play an important role in delivering justice.
We firmly support the African Union's efforts to establish this hybrid court, which is called for by the peace agreement, which was signed by President Kiir and First Vice President Machar in August 2015. And we expect the parties to fulfill their responsibilities. You know, reconciliation and justice are not mutually exclusive, which is why the peace agreement includes both elements and why the United States will make every effort to support the formation of both as critical steps towards peace and reconciliation and stability in South Sudan.
Turner dismisses Mr. Kiir and Machar's statement that disciplinary justice, similar to hybrid court, would destabilize efforts to unite the country. Turner says the hybrid court would instead complement the efforts of the Commission on Truth, Reconciliation and Healing.
We're not against a Commission for Truth and Reconciliation and Hearing, and Healing, rather. You know, that's that could be an important part of this peace agreement. And that could look at the root causes of the conflict and lead to, as they have in the past in places like South Africa, some kind of reconciliation and some kind of healing. and in fact, you know, we've given $6 million in grant money to support the efforts of the South Sudan Council of Churches to promote reconciliation in the country. But again, they're not mutually exclusive, and you're absolutely right that, you know, there needs to be accountability. And so that's why we strongly support the hybrid court and urge all sides to live up to their commitments in the peace agreement to create that hybrid court.
Turner says the transitional government of national unity has made progress in recent weeks, including ending the state of emergency, proceeding with the cantonment areas, agreeing to establish a technical committee on state boundaries, as well as releasing a number of prisoners of war. Meanwhile, the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch is calling on the African Union to go ahead and set up the hybrid court as stipulated in the August peace agreement to try alleged crimes, war crime suspects. Associate Director of the International Justice Program at Human Rights Watch, Elsie Kepler, tells VOA's James Batty that setting up the court would prove the African Union is committed to rejecting impunity in South Sudan.
The article drafted by Riek Machar and Salva Kiir really represents a self-serving effort to escape accountability. These leaders themselves are implicated in horrific crimes committed in South Sudan. They themselves agreed as part of a peace agreement to have justice advanced, And they took to the pages of the New York Times to attempt to sidestep the justice issue, pushing instead a proposal for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
As they said in the article, bringing South Sudan together, they say, can be truly guaranteed only through one route, which is an organized peace and reconciliation process.
Meanwhile, experience shows that that claim is untrue and outdated. Human Rights Watch, working for the past 20 years in a range of conflict situations, has found that impunity, lack of justice, regularly fuels more abuses. By contrast, having fair criminal trials promotes respect for rule of law, signals that these kinds of crimes will not be tolerated, and brings redress for victims.
But Elise, if this sort of thing worked in South Africa, why can't it work in South Sudan?
At the time that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was created in South Africa, it was really a different era. The Yugoslav and Rwanda tribunals had not been fully operational. You didn't have an international criminal court. There were certain realities that justice really had never been advanced in, 40 years around the globe for the worst atrocities. What's come to pass is that justice is now possible, and it's guaranteed not only under international law, but also in terms of principle for victims and rejecting impunity. What's important here is that the African Union itself has committed to reject impunity, and it has the responsibility to create a hybrid war crimes court for South Sudan.
Elise, just as I'm speaking with you, I've received a text from Juba, and this is from James Gadet, the SPLM IO office. It says here that the article published by New York Times alleging that First Vice President His Excellency Dr. Riek Machar had agreed with President Salva Kiir to avoid justice or trial for those responsible for the atrocities committed in the war is not true. Somebody must have written it without the knowledge and agreement of the SPLMIO leadership.
To the extent that this comes forward as it being true that Machar was not actually involved with this peace, the better. Because Machar and Kiir should be behind the idea of breaking what's been this cycle of violence and impunity and moving ahead with justice.
Elsie Kepler is the Associate Director of the International Justice Program at Human Rights Watch. She was speaking with VOA's James Batty from New York City. South Sudanese officials today destroyed tons of ivory confiscated from poachers across the country. Wildlife officials say burning the ivory proves the government's commitment to fight poaching. South Sudanese officials say the country is rich and diverse with wildlife. Officials say the country's rich and diverse wildlife is disappearing rapidly due to increased poaching, especially during the country's many years of instability. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has the story for VOA from Juba.
That's the sound of officials lighting on fire 5 tons of ivory and other wildlife products in Juba worth more than 150 million South Sudanese pounds. Brigadier Hamis Adieng, spokesperson for the National Wildlife Services in South Sudan, says his officers recovered the ivory from illegal poachers since 2011.
The source of this ivory is either confiscated through the courts or convicted from violators of law. And most of them are from Juba International Airport. The decision is always either Cairo or Sudan.
According to Wildlife Conservation Society officials in Juba, poachers in South Sudan have been killing various protected wild animal species for dozens of years. For example, black and white rhinoceros have become nearly extinct in the country ever since the 1970s. Conservationists in South Sudan say the population of elephants has decreased from an estimated 250,000 to only 2,500 elephants in the last 30 years. Wildlife Conservation and Tourism Minister Nunu Jema Kumba says poaching in South Sudan has got to stop.
Many species remain at risk, and it will take a dedicated and sustained effort by each and every one of us to turn the tide. More people need to understand the damage this illicit business is doing to our environment, livelihoods, communities, and security. We must change our habits and behavior so that demand for illegal wildlife products should fall.
June 5th was World Environment Day, aimed at inspiring more people to take action to prevent the growing strain on the Earth's natural system from reaching the breaking point. This year's theme highlights the fight against the illegal trade in wildlife, which erodes biodiversity and threatens the survival of rhinos, elephants, and other creatures. Wildlife experts say the killing of animals and smuggling undermines economies and ecosystems, fueling organized crime while feeding corruption and insecurity across the globe. Kumba says her ministry has adapted to world conventions that call for the protection of the environment. Speaking at the commemoration of World Environment Day, the Japanese ambassador to South Sudan, Masahiko Kiya, says most of his countrymen have told him they would like to visit South Sudan. But Kiya says the Japanese people will not visit South Sudan if there is no peace.
So it is my sincere hope that all the people, from the leaders to the common man, to make the greatest effort to restore peace as soon as possible so that more people can see the animals here in this country.
Speaking at the same event, the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, Mary Catherine Fee, said the U.S. government is committed to helping South Sudan develop its wildlife and tourism industry.
We are currently designing a new biodiversity program that is likely to begin in October and run for 3 to 5 years. These two projects, the old and the new, illustrate American commitment to the South Sudanese effort to protect and sustainably develop your amazing natural resources.
For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Teachers and pupils of Gamak Primary School at the Yusuf Batel Kam in Maban say county authorities need to supply the school with books, desks, and blackboards. Teachers say teaching and learning is very difficult without school materials. Gift Friday has the story for VOA from Juba.
My name is Gisma Abdallah. I am 10 years old.
At Gamak Primary School, located about 20 kilometers from Buin Town, pupils like Gisma Abdallah talk about their future aspirations. The school was built for Sudanese refugees and is now extremely overcrowded with more than 1,000 pupils. There are no enough tables and chairs, and some pupils in the lower classes either sit on empty tins or on the floor during lessons. 15-year-old Sadiq Al-Sadiq is in primary 5. Sadiq says when he was in primary 2, his family fled Blue Nile State because of the war. Sadiq says he wants to be a pilot when he grows up, but he worries he will never achieve his dream because of the conditions in his school.
The challenges we are facing in the school, the books are not enough, and even the exercise, sometimes we are getting 1, 2, and my colleagues are not coming. Even the games we don't have, volleyball and football, and this one we need them to be. And what we need also is school bag, and we must dress in full uniform.
Gamak Primary School pupil, 14-year-old Intizar Nazir, says she wants to become a nurse in Blue Nile State when she completes her education, so she can turn to sick people in her village. Nazir says there is no health care facility at her school and only one primary health care unit at the Yusuf Batil camp.
We need hospital in the school because when the student is sick, when you go hospital, we will not be cured at that time. The other lessons will not attend them. Line is very tall.
20-year-old Aisha Hussein Juma teaches social studies, English, and mathematics at Gamak Primary School. She says much more must be done to improve the standard of learning at the refugee school.
They need exercise and book, and they don't have shoes to wear in their foot. And even the clothes all is got finished. They don't have a desk to sit on it. And even the classes is not enough. We need many things to help them, and we need more teachers.
Dafal Abdullahi, a science teacher at the same school, says makeshift classroom areas are extremely overcrowded. He says More than 100 pupils squeeze into one class, making it nearly impossible for teachers to assess the learning needs of individual students. Abdullahi also complains about the lack of teaching booklets.
And even the exercises are not enough for them. You see, like, for example, one learner will write four subjects in one exercise. This is a big challenge.
Speaking in Arabic, headmaster Musharadin Basha says he and other teachers are struggling to educate the refugee children because the vast majority of teachers in the refugee schools are untrained.
The most important thing now is teacher training courses. And we also need computer courses to our teachers. We don't have any syllabus. We are just trying from the books which are brought. We have the South Sudan syllabus, but missing a lot of things. It needs a teacher's guide to help the teachers in preparing lesson plans.
And teachers say the school has no copies of the South Sudan education curriculum, which South Sudanese education officials have asked them to implement. Jokshan Foya, UNHCR's education program manager in Maban, agrees there are too few qualified teachers in schools at Yusuf Batil camp. But he says he is grateful that Save the Children is sponsoring an in-service training program for up to 400 unqualified teachers. Foyoa says UNHCR is doing everything it can to improve the learning environment for the refugee children. He says the UN Refugee Agency recently conducted an assessment in the area to understand the education needs across Maban County.
Inasmuch as we don't have qualified teachers, we give them continuous training, and we provide mentoring and coaching, and we are supporting the ministry to identify gaps and provide minimal support because the resources are not enough to cover both refugees and hosts. So we do support them with stationery, we support them with scholastic materials when we have.
According to Foyer, more than 27,000 refugees' children have enrolled in Maban County's 23 refugees' schools so far this year. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese refugees learn to become self-reliant. Find out how after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
How do you spend your day off from work?
My day off, which is normal a Sunday anyway, personally. I go to church, go back home, do my laundry, watch a movie or soccer. I think basically that's my routine.
I do laundry in the morning. I love traveling and I love swimming. Sometimes I go for swimming, sometimes I go for shopping, sometimes I party with friends. You know, that's that day I get free to be around friends.
Reading some novels and also sometimes doing my personal cleaning.
Hang with the family members, relax your mind and forget about the work or something. I just relax. I basically sleep it off because you'd be tired.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Sudanese government has been calling for the United Nations African Union hybrid mission in Darfur, or UNAMID, to leave the country. Analysts say the humanitarian situation in Darfur would be worse than now if UNAMID pulls out. In our final series on the work of UNAMID, we take a look at the factors that would allow the orderly withdrawal from the Sudan's restive region. Nabil Biagio has this report for VOA from Juba.
UNAMID spokesman Ashraf Issa says talks about UNAMID's exit strategy were well underway through a tripartite committee earlier this year, but the committee's work came to a halt due to the deteriorating security situation when the government of Sudan began bombing Jebel Marra to stamp out a rebel group led by Abdul Wahid Nur.
Unfortunately, between January this year and March, there has been significant displacement, which meant that the mission continued to discharge its protection of civilian mandate, and it's assisting of the UN country team and the agencies and humanitarian workers to ensure that those IDPs are getting the essential humanitarian aid they need. So basically, this is what the situation is at the moment.
Aisha says whether UNAMID stays or goes, there must be a permanent political solution to end the Darfur conflict and ensure sustainable peace in the area. He says UNAMID is working with the Qatari government and the African Union to mediate peace between the government and the rebel groups in Darfur. He says peace cannot come to Darfur through the barrel of a gun.
I think there is a realization, a general realization from the international community as well as the stakeholders, that there isn't a military solution for the Darfur problem. The Darfur problem will only be resolved and settled through negotiations and through a political process. And the head of mission, in his capacity as Joint Chief Mediator, is exerting efforts to bring together the mediation efforts and all the endeavors to create peace in Darfur, either through the Doha document for peace in Darfur or through the AU High Implementation Panel headed by President Mbeki.
The last round of peace talks mediated by Thabo Mbeki in Addis Ababa failed to achieve anything after the Darfur rebel groups refused to sign Mbeki's framework agreement and accused him of being biased in favor of the Sudanese government. The framework agreement, which was drafted by Mr. Mbeki himself, called for a general cessation of hostilities in Darfur and for the rebels to put down their arms and join the national dialogue in Khartoum. Aisha says the government's latest efforts to resolve the crisis have not gone unnoticed. Some observers say until all the parties come to the table, UNAMID should re-evaluate its performance in the region. Khartoum-based political commentator Saleh Mahmoud says the makeup of UNAMID troops should change. Currently, all UNAMID troops on the ground in Darfur are from North African countries and countries from sub-Saharan Africa. Mahmoud says the United States and other Western countries that are contributing military resources to UNAMID must also put some boots on the ground to boost the effectiveness of the force.
Government of Sudan reducing it to be restrictive, basically African troops and Islamic Arabic troops. No foreign element from Europe, from America, from Canada.
President Omar al-Bashir has been indicted by the International Criminal Court on charges of committing genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity in the government military campaign to crush rebellion in Darfur. He has traveled to a handful of friendly African and Middle Eastern nations, but has never been taken into custody to face the charges in The Hague. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
Sudanese refugees at the Yusuf Batil camp in Maban say a vocational skill training program at the camp is empowering some refugees to become self-reliant once they finish the program. The refugees are being trained in a range of skills, including tailoring and carpentry. Gift Friday visited the vocational training center in Maban recently and has this report for VOA from Juba.
17-year-old Sudanese refugee Usman Abdurrahman practiced his carpentry skills at the Yusuf Batil camp yard in Maban. Every morning, Usman heads off to his carpentry workshop. In the afternoons, Usman leaves the workshop to attend the accelerated learning program, which aims to help young people who missed out on education during their early years to complete primary education within 4 years instead of the normal 8 years. Abdurrahman is in grade 4 at the program at Gamak Primary School. He says it is not easy living as a refugee outside of his country. Speaking at the training program, he says he now has a future as a carpenter.
Can support us. If you are make something, it's good. You will get a lot of money. I know it is good for us to learn. I will learn first. When I learn, that time I will get the money.
Abdurrahman is one of the 30 refugees at the camp taking the vocational training programs. 25-year-old Atoma Idris says she has attended a week of training on tailoring. Speaking in Arabic, Atoma says she is confident her new skills will help her earn enough money to take care of her 5 children.
This will help me get money and to show clothes so that foreigners, especially white people, will buy from us and give us money.
Idris says she is grateful to the UN Refugee Agency for giving her the chance to have a better life once she leaves the camp. Zahra Mahmoud is another student at the vocational training school. She says her new tailoring skills will enable her to make school uniforms for the orphans and widows within the camp. Speaking in Arabic, Mahmoud says she hopes the trainers will give her a sewing machine once her training is completed.
I need them to give me my sewing machines, some money and some clothes so that I start sewing clothes to help our children in the schools.
The head of the training center, Ali Adam, says the program has been running for the last 3 years and is supported by the Lutheran World Foundation, which has benefited some 150 refugees. Speaking in Arabic, Adam says equipping the refugees with occupational skills will help them take care of their families.
We offer the training so that after the training they can be self-reliant, because we have widows. There are also girls without either a mother or a father. As such, we train those so that they can work and raise their children and register them in school.
He says the Lutheran World Foundation distributed sewing machines to each of the refugees who completed the training program in 2013. Many of them now earn money from sewing uniforms for the thousands of school-age refugee children at the Youssef Batil camp. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The U.S. says it's disappointed to read President Salva Kiir's and First Vice President Riek Machar's New York Times opinion piece, in which they argue against forming a hybrid court and promote instead a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which would grant amnesty to all participants. State Department spokesman Mark Toner says people must be held accountable for crimes committed during South Sudan's two-and-a-half-year conflict, and the hybrid court will play an important role in delivering justice. He also says the U.S. expects South Sudan's leaders to abide by the terms of the peace deal. South Sudanese officials today destroyed tons of ivory confiscated from poachers across the country. Wildlife officials say burning ivory proves the government's committed to fighting illegal poaching. And finally, teachers and students at Gamak Primary School in the Youssef Batil camp in Mbaban County say education officials must supply the school with more textbooks, desks, and chalkboards. That's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday, and we'll leave you with the song Habibi Nur al-Ain by Amir Diab.
حبيبي يا نور العين يا ساكن خيالي عاشق بقالي سنين ولا غيرك في بالي حبيبي يا نور العين يا ساكن خيالي عاشق بقالي سنين ولا غيرك في بالي حبيبي يا نور العين يا ساكن خيالي عاشق بقالي سنين ولا غيرك في بالي حبيبي يا نور العين يا ساكن خيالي عاشق بقالي سنين ولا غيرك في بالي
We have been listening to Amir Diab with the song Habibi Nur al-Ain. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.